so am I, still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Fuck, that's me. Oh my god. This is yours.
Sorry.
Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, together tonight, in one steel cage, and much like the month of March itself, and the wacky weather we've been having across the country, we welcome you to the most unpredictable, the most dangerous, the most mind-boggling pay-per-view of the year, World Championship Wrestling presents Uncensored 1999.
Welcome to Review Away with John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, we're just coming off of the TNA Lockdown pay-per-view event, their annual all-steel cage match event.
Yes, it was a wonderful, wonderful event. I mean, I couldn't believe the amount of cage inside the event.
This was your first TNA pay-per-view you've watched in quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
Was there one particular performance that stood out for you?
Well, you know, obviously this is just coming off of right after watching the pay-per-view, so the adrenaline is still rushing through my veins. I think the main event was really good.
Yes, it was. I was surprised they I figured they would finish the show with that, actually, so it didn't come as too much of a surprise. But we're going to be talking about a different pay-per-view today, Wei, that didn't feature any rules, and that was WCW Uncensored.
Oh, but also a cage match, and also the same main eventers.
Exactly. And we're going to get to that. And as well, joining us later in the show is going to be Mikey Whipwreck, who made his WCW debut on this show, working against Billy Kidman. We're going to chat with Mikey Whipwreck about that specific match, and also someone on this card who buried him after his match. So we're going to be talking to Mikey about that. But first of all, Wei, I wanted to discuss, because Uncensored 1999, it took place on March the 14th of 1999. Your birthday, you turned 15 years old, and this is what WCW gave you as a gift. Do you happen to recall your 15th birthday party? Or what you did to celebrate?
I really do not. I would have either.
You were not watching Uncensored?
No, I was not.
On your illegal box?
It didn't work back then. Back then, I think Rogers started to change into digital cable and that was taken away from me. But I would have been in the 9th or 10th grade, and I didn't really have parties at that age. I think might have gone to medieval times with my family and a couple of my friends. Yeah.
I'm glad you outgrew that, and now you do celebrate your birthday every year.
Yeah, sure.
We're now going to get into our review of the 1999 Uncensored event. It took place from Louisville, Kentucky, Wei. At the Louisville Gardens. And let's start off with the Cruiserweight Championship match, which kicked off the event. Billy Kidman against the debuting Mikey Whipwreck for the Cruiserweight Championship. And my VHS tape, apparently when I watched this event, this started about 10 minutes late, so we did miss the opening couple of minutes.
I actually watched this match on YouTube.
Oh, look at you.
So I happened to catch the beginning of it, and what I can say from the beginning of this Mikey Whipwreck's debut was that Whipwreck had no music. He just came out to booze for some reason. I don't know if he had cut promos earlier during some
No, they didn't really plan for his debut.
Well, he came out to some booze and no music at all. And they described Mikey Whipwreck as being only 25, which surprised me, because he has been a name in the industry for quite some time.
Oh, yeah, he was working, of course, in ECW back in at the time heading into this, and was someone that actually held the ECW title and tag titles with Cactus Jack, and that was really where he made his name, was in ECW, and mm-hmm. then got the big offer to come to WCW. So he did have a bit of a name, especially in the Northeast at this point.
That's right. So go on with the match. I think we'll just continue.
Well, Tony Schiavone noted that there were millions of people watching on pay-per-view, which there definitely were not at this time. Some interesting spots in this match. I enjoyed this match. We saw Whipwreck go off the top into a steel rail. There was a flip by Mikey Whipwreck into the audience, and he landed back first onto the cement, which if you listen to the first part of our Mikey Whipwreck interview on The Law last week, you know the problems he has now with some of the bumps he took back then. I noted here they spent about 3 minutes outside of the ring.
3 minutes?
I guess there's no count-out set on Censored.
I guess not, but yes, yes. So nothing happened in between to distract the referee? Because what would happen is you could be outside for quite some time, and then the referee, maybe somebody would shout something at the referee, or a valet would distract the referee, and the referee would restart his count.
Well, he got caught up and didn't remember where he was at in the count.
It's like the referees just suddenly forget where they're at and decide to count. Why not just count over again? I thought Whipwreck was really good here. He outworked Kidman, in my opinion. I mean, both guys were good, but Whipwreck himself, he just seemed like he had something to prove, you know, on probably the biggest stage of his career up to this point.
And it also should be noted, as Mikey will allude to in his interview, that the previous Monday, Nitro, was their annual spring break Nitro, where they basically go to some beach resort area, have Nitro, and it was a big party time for the roster, and apparently Billy Kidman definitely partook in the party.
Really?
Heading into this pay-per-view. Might not have been on his sharpest for this pay-per-view match. I noticed there was a bit of a couple of Mikey chants during the latter part of this match. We saw an overhead suplex by Whipwreck off of the top. Then Kidman countered a powerbomb by Mikey Whipwreck and hit the Shooting Star Press for the win. And Schiavone then mentions the sellout crowd here in Louisville, which I was looking because I saw a lot of empty seats at this pay-per-view. So Billy Kidman retains the title against Mikey Whipwreck, who receives a title shot in his debut with the company.
Yeah, I thought this was actually a very good match. Perhaps the best match on the show. Actually, definitely the best match on the show. It seemed like he was working an ECW-style match in a WCW environment, and I think he was successful, unlike some of the other ECW alums we would see later on in this program.
We then go to a video way that would be the blow-off to the feud between Stevie Ray and Vincent, the man that we... Well, we've had encounters with both of these men in the last couple of weeks. Of course, Vincent turned us down for an interview a couple of weeks ago at Wizard World.
Yeah, we didn't mention that last week, actually. I don't think we mentioned Virgil.
Oh, did that not come up in the discussion?
No, it didn't. It was just, for those of you, if you remember our photo contest that we had many months back, I think somebody uploaded the picture of... I guess it was Chris Hero imitating Virgil, and there's this photo on the internet of Virgil at a wrestling convention sitting all by himself in front of a banner that says "Meet Wrestling Superstar Virgil," and you could just see there's nobody lining up for this man, and it's one of the most saddest and hilarious photos of wrestling that exists on the internet. So we're at this Wizard World convention, and I swear to God, it was that exact same image, but...
Except it said, "Meet wrestling superstars Ted DiBiase and Virgil."
Underneath. Yeah, and DiBiase
was obviously not there. He was being inducted into the Hall of Fame that weekend as the headliner for the WWE.
Meanwhile, man, Virgil's just right there. No lineup whatsoever. He's all by himself behind a table.
And then I go up to him, and I said, "Hey, my name's John Pollock. I'm with the Fight Network." He's like, "Oh, hey, man, how's it going?" I'm like, "Would it be possible to get a quick interview with you?" He's like, no, not interested. And he turns his back on us. Jerk.
Maybe he listens to the podcast.
Maybe he does. Well, now he knows, oh, shit, that was John Pollock and Wei Ting.
Oh.
I could have been on Review Away. And meanwhile, on the complete 180 from that, Stevie Ray calls into The Law once again last weekend. This guy... is a super guy.
He's cool.
Stevie Ray we like. Vincent, not so much. But nonetheless, we were going to be getting this matchway, which I know you were looking forward to. During this video, Ray says that Vincent isn't yoke anymore. Vincent states that he loves to fight in the projects. And then they show Hogan working both guys against each other. And then Stevie Ray announces that he's going to kick his Rudy Poo fruit booty in this match. All I've gathered from this is that Hogan actually lowered himself to be part of this feud, And Vincent's gimmick is that he wears Oakley sunglasses.
Did you get Hogan's line here to Stevie Ray? You're the guy who needs to lead those black and white guys.
Oh, well, that was very, there was a racial overtone there that was unnecessary.
Because at this time, the NWO was divided into the red and white, red and black and the white and black, the B team, of course.
How
and,
confusing.
The black guys were on the B team.
The black Who and else white? Was in the black and white guys? Well, Horace was with black and white.
Yeah. Why were the only black members on the B team? And why are the only black members fighting for the leadership of the B team in a Harlem street fight?
In Louisville, Kentucky. A Harlem street fight in Louisville, Kentucky. I've never understood why they've promoted, you know, Chicago street fights in other cities. Isn't that weird? Would you pay to see a Harlem street fight in Louisville, Kentucky? That's a trick question because no one would pay to go watch Uncensored.
Yeah.
All right. They then show a very cheesy video of this steel cage for tonight's main event being constructed. And that leads us to, yes, the Harlem street fight between Stevie Ray and Vincent. And early on, both men brawl into the crowd. Crowd is very excited here. Both men inside of the ring, they looked like they bumped heads in a botched spot. And that was the highlight of this match for me. That being the finish as well, when Horace ran down.
Oh my god, it was fucked up.
He threw in a slapjack and then looks at the camera and says, "I don't care who wins, I'm the leader." And Stevie Ray grabs the slapjack, hits it with Vincent, and gets the win.
No, that did not happen. Here's what happened.
Okay. Tell me what happened.
Okay, Horace throws in the slapjack, which is like the piece of leather thing. He goes to hit Stevie Ray with it, but misses. Stevie Ray knocks it out of him. And then Stevie Ray hits his finishing move, which is coincidentally called the slapjack.
Sorry, I just had written here, Stevie wins with slapjack.
Yes.
You're right. There were two different slapjacks that you had to wrap your head around. And then just in case you gave a shit about this match, Horace reinforced that the outcome doesn't matter here.
How clever. We're going to throw a slapjack in. But he's not going to win with that slapjack. He's going to win with another slapjack. It was just so stupid, man. Like, they messed up a bunch of spots. There was this weird part where Vince hits his head on a ring post, and then Stevie bumps into him, knocks himself out by bumping into his shoulder. Like, it was just a big mess, a huge mess. And what was with Horace throwing in a random weapon into the ring? Couldn't he have just waited for an outcome? I guess he was impatient. He just wanted
match to end. I actually have no problem with that spot. Backstage, Mark Madden is interviewing Chris Jericho for WCW.com, discussing his upcoming dog collar match later tonight. This was the first of many moments where I looked at certain guys on this show and was like, why are you in this company? And I believe this was Chris Jericho's last pay-per-view with the company. Mm-hmm. Up next, Way, Kevin Nash versus Rey Mysterio. Big feud here, as Kevin Nash was booking WCW at the time. And if you recall, the previous month at Super Brawl, there was a tag match where Nash and Hall beat Rey Mysterio and Conan, forcing Rey Mysterio to unmask. Because there's no money in a masked wrestler, despite his merchandise sales 9 years later. We go then to a previous edition of Nitro, where Rey Mysterio scores the upset win over Kevin Nash. And I know a lot of people have heard various interviews where Kevin Nash, always to his defense, says, "Hey, I lost to Rey Mysterio on TV." Then it led to this pay-per-view, which somehow escapes the mind of Kevin Nash in those same interviews. He destroyed this man. Comes down with Lex Luger and Elizabeth. We show tons of crowd shots for the Wolfpack, for Kevin Nash, all babyface signs for the heel Kevin Nash.
And then what does Kevin Nash say on the microphone?
Nash cuts a babyface promo saying, "What's up, Louisville, Kentucky? Wolfpack in the house." To a huge babyface response. Then Ray just looks like a complete dork in this match. They gave some early spots to Ray. It was just comedy big man spots by Nash as he made fun of the size of Rey Mysterio. Then Mysterio is tripped by Lex Luger and walks into a big boot by Kevin Nash. Nash then does a spot where he puts Rey in the corner and does his little picture frame for the elbow. But Rey is too small, Way, for this move. So Nash then thinking on the fly, takes Ray and seats him on the top rope and then can give him an elbow to the face. Awesome booking here. Then it's after the big boot that Nash hits the power bomb, grabs the tights in the most ridiculous looking finish, and defeats Ray clean. And the announcers, in case they were worried, note that this ends Rey Mysterio's win streak since losing his mask.
No.
Awesome.
So let me get this straight. Kevin Nash takes Rey Mysterio's mask.
And wins the following feud.
Yeah, Rey gets one victory over him.
A fluke win.
But here we have, in the pay-per-view, in the blow-off, we have Kevin Nash destroying Rey Mysterio, cutting a babyface promo over the babyface, and getting his win back, his much-needed win back. All right.
And he's the one booking this company.
Yeah. Well, where are they now? You know, look 10 years down the line. I mean, each of these individuals.
I know the year 2000 was a terrible year for WCW, and you can watch those shows and just, this shit sucks. But at least in early 1999, this company still had a hope. And it's shows like this that were telling you this company is fucked. We keep going, everyone. We then go to a video package of Raven, who is, he notes that he is violent because of his parents. Then we go to Hack, who beats himself with a kendo stick, and then Bam Bam Bigelow, who announces that tonight he's going to take them to the next level. Horrible video transitions on this show, Way. They used a transition where they'd show these WCW letters, where the W was red for some reason, and then the C and the W were white. But it wasn't their logo, though.
It's uncensored.
Oh.
No, the sensors.
Oh,
there's
so
no
their graphics package has been thrown out.
Their graphics, their creative director is uncensored. There's
they also had these diagonal lines as like a wipe that was straight out of Don Elder's second year class at Ryerson.
That's it. Yes,
like the star wipe we had. Yeah. These diagonal lines, I guarantee you, are one of the options.
Well, it's cutting edge for the time. It's so
in
retro. It's new again.
Now, I know we just said that we saw a video package for Raven, Hack, and Bam Bam Bigelow. Our next match, Jerry Flynn versus Ernest Miller and Sonny Ono in a karate match. What's a karate match, Way?
I have no clue. I saw that written on the front of your VHS box, and I didn't know what it meant.
It was labeled, yes. I don't know what a karate match is either, before and after watching this match. Jerry Flynn, at first, I looked at, because as we have noted in previous review away is some old tapes of mine I have labeled with the matches on them for convenience sake. Mm-hmm. And when I went to pop this in, I was like, I thought for sure Jerry Lynn was in ECW at the time, and I was kind of looking forward to seeing Jerry Lynn. I'm like, oh, this guy, Jerry Flynn.
When this dude,
I had totally forgot about this guy.
When this dude walked out, I had no clue who this was.
And like, dude,
I was
in 1999, wrestling. The whole crowd didn't know who this guy was.
Oh my god, yeah. And I was watching wrestling at this time. I just had no idea who this Jerry Flynn is. As best as I can describe him for people who don't know, he looks like one of the guys from Adam Sandler's movies, like one of his friends. He's the brunette. You know what I mean? The guy, like in Little Nicky, played one of the stoners. Anyway,
all right,
he just looks like that dude.
I did like though the contrasting gimmicks between matches here, because we had Rey Mysterio, who lost his mask, something close to him, and he went on a winning streak. And now in this match, we had Jerry Flynn, who had his prized rat tail shaved off, and he went on a winning streak. Awesome booking on this company. So all you have to do to go on a winning streak is lose something.
That is amazing, his prized rat tail.
That was the gift. They explained this. Ernest Miller and Sonny Ono cut off his rat tail.
That's so awesome.
Anyway,
I like this pay-per-view, actually.
Tony Schiavone notes that promoters say Flynn could be top 5 in all categories by next year.
What?
He noted that promoters, in plural, meaning WWF, ECW, they all agree that Jerry Flynn could be top 5 in all categories next year. Now, how many categories can he possibly fit into? He can't be in the women's division. He is not a cruiserweight. He's not in a tag team. So what does that leave? Singles. Heavyweight division? Do we have a middleweight division?
I don't understand what this means,
but apparently Jerry Flynn...
There's a karate division.
Jerry Flynn could be headlining pay-per-views in a year. He wasn't, but this might have been his one and only pay-per-view for all I know.
The rules of this match were not explained at all. They were just...
It was a karate match.
A karate match, and then it's here you had Sonny Ono accompany Ernest Miller. Sonny Ono's wearing a karate gi, and we're led to believe that... I mean, this match was no different than a typical handicap match, a two-on-one handicap match. What were the karate rules in this match?
Well, the karate match started with the cat attacking Jerry Flynn with an empty water bottle.
Okay.
Plastic.
Anyway.
Flynn chased a Sonny Ono outside the ring and ran into a kick by the cat. I don't know what to note here. I just went right to the finish where Ono fell down, he was pinned, and I noted flat finish, win by Flynn.
Yeah.
Any other notes on this match? This was completely
well. I noted that at this time MMA was not definitely nowhere near as the level it is today, of course. But I was very surprised that Mike Danae accurately called the mount. I think Miller had Flynn in the mount, and Mike Danae actually calls it that.
Yeah, just like the Jenna Maraska match.
Charmel. Yeah,
punches from the mount.
Yeah. Flynn's nickname on the back of his pants is Lightning Foot.
Sounds like something like Kevin Bacon would have starred as.
Yeah.
Lightning Foot.
Lightning Foot. Oh, man. I don't know. All I kept thinking was, it did definitely seem like, obviously we know Ernest Miller used to be Eric Bischoff's son's karate teacher, correct?
Yeah, that's how he got a job.
And it looked like Jerry Flynn himself had a lot of martial arts experience. So I'm just trying to think. These are two men, obviously, whose passions in life in the past were martial arts. What led them to make the career move to have these pretend fights all of a sudden in a wrestling ring, bastardizing their former
knowing that
craft?
The fact that probably each guy had a six-figure deal in WCW probably pushed them in this direction, I'm guessing. Especially for Miller, who you know got a sweetheart deal coming
out.
Yeah,
that's true.
We go to a video with Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko hyping up their match with Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham, who we also hear from. So, coming up next, not the tag title match.
Yeah, this was a really creepy video, actually. It just had...
Chris
Benoit, and like, he was holding a strap, and there are just these slow-mo close-ups of the guy next to this creepy music. I know you loved it.
Was not looking forward to this. I'm pretty sure these videos were all played out of order. So we had a Raven, Hack, and Bigelow video leading into the Flynn and Miller match. And then we had a Benoit Malenko against Hennig and Windham video leading into Raven versus Hack versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Raven was accompanied by his sister, Chastity. And this was going to be a hardcore match. And I absolutely hated this match, Way.
Yeah, I mean, compared these
after
three guys...
After I got into that endless argument online about chair shots to the head, this match was almost like a joke on me for giving such a shit, where these guys, right from the start, garbage cans to the head, everything. It was just unprotected chair shots. Listen. At one point, I just threw my hands up at this match. This epitomized the late 90s. I hated these fucking hardcore matches. I still hate them now.
Yeah.
They mean nothing to me. But let's go through it.
Well, here you have obviously a Bam Bam, Raven, and the Sandman. Three of the most well-known figures from ECW, and I guess at this time WCW wanted to...
Be ECW.
Wanted to...
They just wanted to take ECW guys. Whipwreck, Raven, Hack. Fuck, Bigelow was in ECW and came over here.
The problem was, people in WCW had no idea what the fuck it was that made ECW so special. They just figured, let's throw these three guys in there with a ton of garbage and we'll get the same quality and the same crowd involvement that we would see at an ECW show. No, that was not the case.
We saw a mailbox used at one point. All these weapons are coming out, and Schiavone and Bobby Heenan pissed me off to no end. Just comedy. This whole match, as these guys were killing themselves. We got an ECW chant, which the fact it was in Kentucky was rather impressive.
Which is, in my opinion, a huge insult to ECW. Why would you chant ECW seeing what you're seeing here? Here's some of the list of the items that we saw. We saw an ironing table, cookie sheets, a mailbox, as you mentioned, a snow shovel, and even a portable fan.
Portable, of course. There was a double sleeper spot by all three guys. We saw a Hurricane Rana to Raven by Hack off of the top rope. Bigelow delivered a powerbomb to Hack, but the table didn't break, so Hack, with his probably bruised ribs, then took a splash by Bigelow through the table. Then, in the dumbest spot of this entire show, Raven tapes the hands of Hack, and they redo the Mick Foley Rock Royal Rumble spot from beyond the mat, where he just starts attacking Hack with unprotected chair shots to the head while Hack's hands are tied behind his back. Four chair shots, I counted here.
Very stupid. Obviously, in hindsight, I mean, back then, I wonder how much people knew.
Not a whole lot, but it was just, my God.
I've always wondered, though, why can't they work chairs like they do other weapons? Like, why can't they use just an aluminum, like a softer material for metal chairs?
I've never understood why we just don't have chair shots to the back. Is the pop that much louder for a headshot than to the back?
Well, you're dealing with thinking in that ECW mindset, you know, you're dealing with those crowds. I think you have a lot of people who do expect unprotected chair shots, at least back then, which is, knowing what we know now is ridiculous.
But it's like, we always say that, knowing what we know now.
Yeah.
Wait, if I was friends with you in 1999 and we were out for your 15th birthday party, and I
watching
said, hey, let's play wrestling way, I'm going to take this metal chair and I want to hit you right on top of the head. You would probably say that's fucking stupid, Pollock.
No, it is stupid. But then I would also say taking a back bump off of a snapmare would be stupid. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do half of the things these guys do. These are professionals.
But you can't... I can at least train myself to take a flat back bump. But you can take a back bump without it hurting. Taking metal to the head? There's no preparation for that.
Maybe these guys...
There's no upside to it.
No, there is none. But there, would you take a fucking flaming table thing or a dive off of a cage? Come on. These are wrestlers. That's what they're paid to do.
Just amazing. We then saw the greetings from Asbury Park delivered by Bigelow to Raven. Of course, it was a near fall. I should note that during that Raven hack chair spot, Heenan and Schiavone were cutting jokes.
Well, the announcers had no clue what was going on, and they
just laughed.
I mean, I don't really blame them, because how the fuck do you call this stuff? It's just one man hitting another over the head with garbage. Imagine being the guy.
Go watch the Rumble. The Beyond the Mat thing. Was Michael Cole cutting jokes with Lawler during that whole thing? That match would have died if they were just telling knock-knock jokes.
Yeah, but
the
listen,
whole time.
There's no way they could have injected any type of drama to this. There was
no flow.
They
didn't even try.
There was no flow, no storyline whatsoever. It was just, they sent the guy out to Home Depot earlier in the day and just to buy a bunch of random shit. Then they would bring it in here for the guys to hit each other over the head with. There was no storyline, no build whatsoever. It's just a comedy match, in my opinion, this whole thing.
We then saw Hack go to the top rope, and... Oh, who was it here? Was it Raven that went for the moonsault attempt?
No, it was Bigelow.
Bigelow went for the moonsault attempt, that's right. And then Chastity grabbed the fire extinguisher, hit Bigelow in the face, and Bigelow fell through a table.
No, she didn't hit him in the face. She sprayed him. Yeah. And somehow Bigelow lands perfectly onto the table, flush.
And he was met with laughter by Schiavone and Heenan. And then Chastity has the fire extinguisher and then attacks Raven, her brother, and then headbutts him in the balls. And this allowed Hack to get the win and Chastity left with Hack. Oh, this match sucked.
What a perfect way to top off this masterpiece.
A stupid heel turn.
In the middle of all this, we have a heel turn with Chastity.
Oh, the drama. In the middle
of all this as well. It was just such a bad match, and obviously nothing got any crowd reaction.
Nothing. The worst was that these guys were trying to kill themselves, and it didn't mean anything. They could have gone out there and hit each other with bags of popcorn,
And at least then, the laughter would have been warranted, and the audience reaction would have been the exact same. Mm-hmm. Instead, they destroyed their brain cells.
And just... This, to me, is...
I hate when guys go out there and they kill themselves, and there's no point.
Yeah.
It's like a TNA three-way ladder match on Impact. Why would you take all these bumps off a ladder for a nothing Impact match? Yeah. Go out there and coast. That's what I'd do. I'd be a shitty worker on the internet, but I'd at least
you wouldn't
not
make
be
it,
taking stupid bumps.
You wouldn't make it in 1990s WCW.
No, I wouldn't have. They would have called me. They would say I didn't have the love of the industry, and I would say no, I don't.
Well, this was WC. If you thought WWE's version of ECW was bad, this was
that's true.
WCW's
that's true.
Version of ECW.
Shivani notes that tonight is the biggest match of Ric Flair's career.
Yeah,
bigger than his title win over Dusty, bigger than the first Starrcade against Harley Race, bigger than his match with Vader in the '93 Starrcade,
bigger
than any of the WrestleManias he had been on. Bigger than any of them.
John, this would be for the presidency.
Horseman.
This is for the presidency of the WCW.
This is
for
true.
Life.
Yes.
He would
yes.
be president for life.
Yeah, here we are. Uncensored 99, his biggest match ever. No video as we go into a match we already saw a video for. Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham defending the tag team championships against Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko in a strap match way. And it's going to be a lumberjack strap match as all the jobbers in WCW came out to surround the ring. How bad does it have to be Chris Adams, who was told by Arn Anderson, all right, take a walk. And Chris Adams was sent to the back, and Arn Anderson replaced him as one of the lumberjacks at ringside with a belt.
Well, I will say, in defense of that, at least Chris Adams got a mention on TV, which is more than you could say for some of these other guys that were surrounding the ring, like a Prince Iaukea. Nobody would have known whether
Kenny Chaos got a mention there.
Nobody would have known whether he was there or not. Let me just go on a little bit of a...
Go for it, Wade.
Windham and Hennig came out to the most generic music. I mean, the thing about WCW...
This was
music.
Before they started the whole the rap is crap gimmick.
Yes, yes. But they just came up with the most generic theme song. And here you have Barry Windham and Kurt Hennig, right? WCW was... The music there, when you compare it to the WWE, was just... WCW's was just always so cheaply produced. Nothing stood out whatsoever.
It's like TNA now.
Yeah, exactly. In WWE, no matter how small, how low on the card a dude was, like Man's Man or Gangrel or the APA or whatever, they had at least themes that you could identify with and that when you hear, you know this belongs to that team.
And they always, especially for the top guys in WWE, they would have that sound bite off the top where you instantly knew who was coming out.
Yeah.
If you were to do a sample of some of the WCW themed songs, I guarantee you, I would not know half of them.
Exactly. That is, of course, unless they rip off a hit song that's already on the radio.
Yeah. It smells like Teen Spirit.
Yeah. Anyway.
Into the match we go. I mean, standard strap match spots here where Hennig and Windham were thrown out and then they got whipped. Most of the heat was put on Arn Anderson. I guess they did some angle with Arn Anderson on TV as he was getting revenge on Hennig and Windham. They built up to a spot where Malenko got the clover leaf onto Hennig, but Windham made the save. Arn Anderson all of a sudden brought out a tire iron, and that went into the ring, and he attacked Hennig with the tire iron. Then we saw a diving headbutt by Chris Benoit, who got the win, pinning Kurt Hennig. And afterwards, Hennig knocks out Malenko with the belt. But your new tag team champions are Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko. They gave this one like 20 minutes. It was a pretty good match.
But again, John, who were the faces and who were the heels here?
I don't know, because Arn Anderson was positioned as the biggest babyface, and then later in the show, he was...
No, Arn Anderson here, he gives... Okay, the horsemen are supposed to be the babyfaces, right?
After this show, I have no clue.
He gives the horsemen the win with a tire iron.
Yeah.
The guy cheats...
Oh, that
for his
matter.
Team to win. And then Shivani, the best line at the end was that... Has there ever been a more deserving champion, tag team champion, than Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko? Well, yes, there have been many teams who have won the belt without having to cheat. Like, what? I don't understand.
This is 1999, Way. Shades of Grey. Come on.
What the fuck?
New tag champs.
Up next, Way, dog collar match. This was one that when you first heard we were doing this pay-per-view, you were very excited about the dog collar match. Chris Jericho versus Perry Saturn. Saturn, speaking of knockoff teams, came out to The Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson, and he was dressed up as Marilyn Manson.
Yeah.
With a dress and black lipstick, and he had
contact lenses that were neon green.
I think his gimmick was a transvestite.
Yeah, this poor guy, man, the gimmicks he's had to endure, like, he's actually an excellent wrestler. He's an excellent wrestler. And to have to resort to wearing all this shit in order to try and get over.
Remember the last we did a pay-per-view for WWE around this time period before he was doing the dress gimmick?
Yeah.
And he came out with, like, one of the YMCA dancers.
What?
Remember he was all in leather and he had that vest?
I choose not to.
He looked like a member of the Village People.
I mean, the guys have to wear dresses. He's pretended to have a sexual relationship with the mop. And where has he ended up as
well, now he's got, like, a big tattoo on his face.
Is that what he has now?
Have you seen that picture of him recently?
No, I haven't. Just a big
face tattoo. He has resurfaced.
And what is he doing now? What's the update?
I don't know. We'll try and get an interview with him.
That would be awesome.
I did enjoy Saturn as he got into the ring and he looked at the camera. It's like, what are you looking at? This is so awkward. Jericho comes out with...
So what is a dog collar match?
Did they tie each other together here?
Yeah, it's basically a Texas bull rope match.
Yeah, so you got to touch all four corners, I think.
No, you don't.
Well, that's a traditional dog collar match. But that was, I guess this one you were just chained together and it was a regular
match.
My
point exactly. You just watched the show. You had no idea what the...
To be honest, the rules were. A lot of this has been blanked out already. I just watched this 6 days ago.
You have a dog collar match and the rules are never explained. Basically, it's a...
Whoa, whatever. Once we get to the main event, the dog collar stipulations were the least of my concerns. But we'll get to that.
All right, okay.
I've never looked so forward to reviewing a match than the main event on this show. We had both men tied together. Ralphus was told to leave ringside. And my notes, Way, are as follows. Jericho kicks out of DVD. Spot with Lion Tamer. Chain around Saturn's throat. Second DVD by Saturn for win. Saturn wins. Shocking, because I figured with it being Jericho's last pay-per-view with the company, they'd put him over.
Why? Are you being sarcastic?
No. At this time, that would not have shocked me.
Oh.
This is the same company that Benoit said, I am leaving, and they put the title on him.
Well, that wasn't an effort to make him stay.
Well, this could have been an effort to make Jericho
stay. But Jericho actually didn't leave right after this.
No, he was still under contract for a few months, but they took him off TV.
Yeah. I mean, the workers in this match were so talented, but for some reason, when you put them under these circumstances, I could really not care less about anything that they do. They had some, like, just very awkward spots here. Jericho and Saturn are in the apron, and Jericho powerbombs Saturn from the apron back into the ring, and then Jericho himself flops over because we're led to believe that the chain, the force of the chain as Saturn goes off of the powerbomb pulls Jericho in as well. But it makes absolutely no sense because there's at least like a good 6 foot, you know, a 6 foot length in the chain, and it just... Stuff like that, this is a stupid match. I'm sorry. I didn't enjoy this at all. They messed up a bunch of spots. I mean, I've never been a fan of Texas bull rope matches either. I've never seen a good one. But
so we've had a Harlem street fight and a Texas bull rope match in Kentucky. Next up, Way, I didn't even know this match was on the card. They didn't allude to it once on this pay-per-view. Scott Steiner defends the television title against Booker T. This match dragged, and to be honest, I was really getting tired at this point of this whole show. Steiner challenged a fan to fight, and it being uncensored, I'm surprised it didn't happen.
Well, the first 5 minutes of this match were just Steiner walking around the ring and cussing out a lot of the fans and Booker T.
We saw Bagwell attack Booker on the floor. There was one spot where Steiner had Booker in a reverse chin lock, and Tony Schiavone decided to break down the psychology of the dangers of a reverse chin lock.
Yes.
That feared maneuver, the reverse chin lock.
Well, it's one step behind a rear naked choke, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a chin lock.
Well, it's close to it. What got me most about this match was the referee. Like, the referee, Mickey J, he just seemed to be asleep during this whole thing.
Oh, I was asleep watching, so I sympathize.
That makes sense. At one point, Bagwell asks the ref to check Booker T's gloves for foreign objects, and the referee does so. And while doing this, Booker is attacked by Steiner. And, you know, I'm just trying to think, I mean, if this were to happen in the UFC, let's say, you know...
Ed Suarez wanted Damian Maya's gloves to be checked for foreign objects.
Or maybe like a mouth guard, check his mouth guard or whatever. In the middle of washing out a mouth guard, if an opponent were to punch a dude in the face, that dude would not only lose the fight, he'd lose his purse, he'd lose his license in the state that the event was held in, he'd lose his sponsors. Here in WCW...
It's uncensored, way.
Nothing.
Unsanctioned.
Yeah. No, they just let it go.
We saw Bagwell in plain view of Mickey J.
Exactly.
Choke Booker with cables. They never... I will say this, okay? I know we go back to It's Uncensored. Never once on this pay-per-view was it told that there are no DQs or countouts on this show.
Never.
But then again, explaining rules of these matches was not exactly a high point of this pay-per-view.
Like, if there is no DQ, what's the point of checking Booker T's gloves? He should have been able to put anything in
there. Well, do you want to explain the finish of this match?
Oh, okay.
Leads right out of our conversation here with Bagwell with a steel chair.
Oh, my God. Fuck.
The oldest trick in the... If you had a chair, Way, and you wanted to hit a guy, why would I hold him? I'm only going to take the... The guy's going to get hit and knock into me. So Steiner's holding Booker as Bagwell winds up with the chair. Amazingly, Booker gets out of the way and Bagwell hits Steiner. Bagwell takes a bump and Booker gets the win. And Booker is your television champion. Raise your hand if you're listening and you give a shit.
Give a hand to the WCW creative team for very creative
oxymoron.
Finish.
Sucked. Oh, WCW. Matt,
I mean, just imagine watching this show with a non-wrestling fan and trying to justify the fact that you are actually not mentally challenged for watching this stuff.
This company was still doing good buys and good rate, like high threes, low fours on Nitro every week at this point, everyone. They were still salvageable when they were churning out this shit. Which brings us to the main event of all main events. March 14th, 1999. Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair. On the same night, April the 18th, 2010, when we just watched a pay-per-view with Team Hogan versus Team Flair. Hogan versus Flair in a steel cage for the WCW title. Hogan defending the title. Ric Flair, what was he putting up here? His commissionership in the WCW.
Presidency.
His presidency, where if he won, he would be the president forever.
And that's exactly what Michael Buffer said. They had Michael Buffer, of course, introduced it. And
poor Michael Buffer, who does... I mean, this was March of 1999, which featured Oscar De La Hoya and Felix Trinidad, if I'm not mistaken. One of the biggest boxing fights in history. And then he's also doing Uncensored, where he's got to introduce it in a cage like no other.
This match will be like none other in wrestling history.
Title versus... Oh, this is also for the career of Flair, right? If he lost, he'd have to retire.
Was it for that as well?
They said title versus career.
At this point, who cares?
Why there not? Was also barbed wire on top of this cage.
Let's just throw the career stip in there.
Okay,
why not?
Why not? Fuck. Flair cuts a promo before the match, and he tells referee Charles Robinson he doesn't want this match stopped on some little scratch. He wants blood. So right out of the gate, we've established that it's going to be a subjective finish to that of the referee and what he describes as blood or not blood. Awesome. We got entrance music for the cage as it lowered. And then Hulk Hogan came out. Early on, we saw a figure four by Hulk Hogan. Almost right away, there is a giant gash over Flair's right eye from the barbed wire. This was not a scratch, Way. Significant blood. Was the match stopped? No.
Here's, I mean... Yes, anyway, go on. You go on.
I'll keep going.
Yeah.
So we have Flair bleeding significantly in a first blood match. It continues. Hulk Hogan hits a leg drop, but you see, you cannot pin your opponent in this match as the referee instructs Hogan. There are no pins in this match.
keep that in mind.
Charles Robinson
refuses to pin this first leg drop, because as you hear and as the announcers tell us, there is no pinfall in this first blood match.
Flair then punches Hogan with the brass nux and then sends him into the cage head first. Hogan does a blade job. Hogan is bleeding. Both men are bleeding in a first blood match, but no pinfalls can end this match. Both men are bleeding, and we have established that no pins are allowed. Where do you go from here? They just kept wrestling. David Flair comes out with Torrie Wilson. Both men are bleeding. Hulk hulks up, hits a leg drop, and Robinson is so awkward, he then gets down and makes a haphazard one count.
He actually starts counting.
And then says that Flair's shoulder is up. So now we have rendered the babyface. Well, was Hogan a babyface? He was booked like one in this. We rendered his finish, the Hulk up spot, useless.
What they were attempting to do some sort of double turn here. And
horrible.
Give Hogan his, hulking up spot. Meanwhile, Flair would be in cahoots with the referee.
Which made no sense, because then why wouldn't you have called the match when Hogan started bleeding? Then we get a ref bump. David Flair is outside yelling, "Hulk up, Hulk!" Arn Anderson runs out and takes out David Flair. Torrie Wilson attacks Arn Anderson. Rick then hits Hogan with, making his second appearance on the show, the tire iron. Figure four onto Hogan, and Robinson fast counts Hogan. Most nonsensical match I have ever seen. Ric Flair wins the WCW title and is the WCW president for life. Heenan then notes, "What a pay-per-view from top to bottom." And Tanay, with the most honest response, says, "What a night for WCW." What a night indeed, Mike Tanay. Wow. This main event is, without question, the worst main event I've ever seen. It exceeds Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior that we reviewed from Halloween Havoc 98. It made no sense from... I don't care if you want to make a stretch that Charles Robinson was trying to screw Hogan. Even that didn't make sense. There were no hints to that going into this. This was non-censored.
It was.
I renamed uncensored. Non-censored. This show sucked, and I gave it a 0 out of 10. Way.
Oh, wow.
Nothing on this show. Even Mikey Whipwreck and Kidman did not save this for me. Horrible. Oh. Horrible. Horrible. If I had bought this, which I did, I don't know what was wrong with me in buying another WCW event. Holy shit. This company was fucked. They were gone. By March 15th, 1999, the war was over, in my opinion.
Ugh.
Horrible show. What, do you have any closing remarks?
What more can you say? I have nothing else to add.
What do you give this out of 10, Way?
This, to me, for our purposes, and in terms of... an educational tool for aspiring, not just wrestling, people wanting to get involved in pro wrestling, but people wanting to get involved in any sort of fiction writing. And you know what? Even if you just aspire to become a good storyteller in your social circle, this is an invaluable tool of not what to do.
You know what gets
this
me?
This is a masterpiece.
You know what gets me? So many times, people will comment about why WCW died. And they'll say, well, it was because of the AOL Time Warner merger that we just got squeezed out. I challenge any person who believes that statement to watch this show and then tell me that it was just a coincidental merger that led to this company going out of business. Was it the AOL Time Warner merger that caused this company to lose $65 million in 2000? Was it this merger that caused WCW to spend over $200 million in their final year? Was it the merger that caused this pay-per-view to drop in buy rate? Look at the numbers between March of 99 and March of 2000. This company completely fell apart from 99 to 2000. It was a horrible company, and they went out of business because they had zero business sense. Zero.
The best part of the tape... or one of the best parts was that at the end of it, You know how Viewer's Choice always shows, like, you know,
this,
the previews?
I'm so glad you caught this, because I caught it as well.
Because John taped this right off the cable box, and at the end of the broadcast, they would always flash a little thing saying, order next month's pay-per-view, and they'd promote the next wrestling pay-per-view. The next pay-per-view, WrestleMania.
Catch WrestleMania 15.
This was the WCW answer.
Awesome.
To WrestleMania.
Viewer's Choice knew no one was going to be ordering Spring Stampede. Let's just push WrestleMania for the eight people in Canada that bought this, me being one of them. Horrible show. As we mentioned earlier, what we thought was probably the best match on the show, Mikey Whipwreck and Billy Kidman. I chatted with Mikey Whipwreck about this match, so let's go listen to Mikey's experiences of Uncensored, working with Billy Kidman, and which wrestler buried him later in the show. Now, before we start, every week we do a little show called Review Away with myself and Wei Ting, and every week we review an old classic show, and this week we're doing the 1999 Uncensored pay-per-view that WCW put on, and that was your debut match with WCW where you challenged Billy Kidman for the Cruiserweight Championship. Do you have any recollections of the match, your first night in with the company?
Well, I know, I remember that was the beginning and the end of me, pretty much, in WCW.
What was it like going into WCW? I mean, were you kind of aware of the environment you were going into? I mean, your first night in, I mean, it was a whole new environment there in WCW. I mean, was it obvious right off the bat where you were going to be slotted in that promotion?
Not right away. Well, because I was told that I would have a shot to go with Kidman and then move it to Cruiserweight to do like a different Cruiserweight style, because I wasn't exactly the 5'7". 180-pound abs pin-up look that most of the guys had.
Right.
Plus I had a different style. I didn't really do the lucha stuff. I didn't really do all the technical. I was a little more into that ECW, I don't know, hardcore, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's what they told me they wanted. And it was something different to the Cruiserweight and everything. I said, hey, that'd be game for me. So they told me, I think, 2 days before the pay-per-view that I was on it, which was nice. Got a phone call from Jimmy Hart. And we're in there. They said, what, 15 minutes? And I said, okay. And, Paul Anderson told me, go Monkey, just do your thing, have a good match. I said, okay, no problem. And we called the match, and everything seemed, I know we boxed the first spot, but we covered it, and took it from there. And then after the match, everybody said it was great, and found out that I got buried right after the hit.
And generally, most people felt that was the match of the night at Uncensored, and you seemed to really mesh well with Kidman.
I only met him like once, I think, before that. And he was coming, he was doing that spring break WCW thing, so he was down in, I don't know, Pensacola, Panama City, one of those places, and he was gone for a week, and he came back. And I hadn't worked in like 3-4 months. I said, well, this could be fun. This could either be going really, really well or really, really bad. And worked out pretty good. And after the match, a match came to me and said, Mike, it was great, thank you. And then I found out later that Virgil buried me because he had to follow me, him and Stevie Ray. He went running to Hogan or whoever he went to and got buried. And then the next month they had me with Scotty Riggs as a babyface. I guess Scotty Riggs had been off TV and just coming back with like a new gimmick. So it's kind of like put us on the paper just to do it, which kind of made no sense.
That's interesting. And a couple of weeks ago, actually, myself and Wei, we were at a convention up here in Toronto, and we went up to Mike Jones, a.k.a. Virgil, and I went up to him. I'm like, oh, hey, Virgil, how's it going? He's like, oh, great, man. I'm like, hey, could we get a quick interview with you? He just looked at me cold face. No, I don't want to chat with you. So we got stiffed by Virgil, too.
He always been nice to my face, which I guess feels commonplace. Yeah. I guess. But, whatever. If Virgil, felt better about burying me, then I guess that, he buried me for a shitty reason. Yeah. And I hear reports, I guess they told Canyon the same thing. Your matches are too good. You work too hard.
Tell us about your dealings with Booker Kevin Nash. Of course, he was working for the company at the time as well as booking the promotion. What were your interactions like with Kevin?
I didn't really answer the dealing with him. I mean, hey, what's up? That's been like my quick idea, quick fast. And that was pretty much it. I can't say anything bad about him. I mean, he booked me. I don't know if it's, there's no fault behind it. I guess it was one of those things that go, hey, this guy's under contract. I guess we should use him.
Yeah.
And he was cool to me. I mean, Scott Hall was always cool. I mean, I never really had a problem with anybody.
A lot of the guys...
I come in, I kind of do what I'm told. you know, unless I say something really, really stupid or I have an idea, I'll speak up. But I'm not going to, you know, I don't make waves.
Now, I know it was a time in WCW where WWE was really pulling away with the ratings at that point in time. Morale was really low in WCW, and of course, we've all heard the stories about the politics. Did you ever take the politics personally, or was it something where you were going there for a paycheck and you simply showed up for work and collected your paycheck?
Well, I used to get annoyed by it. I used to piss me off. You know, I said, well, I come in, because, you know, ECW, you know, everybody worked on it, you know, from the beginning, opening match. You know, you do what you can. If you just do the show in the opening match, that's great. You know, and then you had to follow from there. So that's back to the guy that I was used to, you know, competition. You know, you do the best you can, and if you have great matches, you're going to go, you're going to get over. But WCW, I just didn't see the work that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't really do it for the politics. I said, you know, whatever, at halftime, I didn't even have to show up. I sat home most of the time. I think I had maybe 7 matches the whole time I was there. Wow. But like Bobby Heenan said, he told me, Mikey, the fucking shit. Just remember, the 15th and the 30th of the month you get paid. That's all you got to worry about.
And what was it, Mikey, that broke the camel's back for you? Was it just something that it was an accumulation of things that eventually you just had to get out of that environment?
Yeah, it was kind of an accumulation, but then I was watching Thunder or whatever it was. And they started pushing Evan Courageous, and they put the Cruiserweight strap on him.
Yeah.
And that just rubbed me the wrong way. You know, not personally, because, you know, I didn't really have too much dealing with the guy. You know, hey, how are you, and things like that. But I go, this makes no fucking sense. You know, look, I go, he's got a good body. Okay, great. He's got a phenomenal body. You know, and he looks like, you know, shit. But he couldn't work to save his ass. You know, he was green as shit, you know, but they pushed him because he had the body they liked. I said, this is, obviously, I'm going nowhere because this is kind of a waste of time. And I figured before I got my notice in the mail, you know, you're getting released every 90 days, I called Taz, and I told Taz, I said, I got to come back. I'm going to quit. And I talked to Paul that night, Paulie. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll call you back in an hour. I said, okay. I'll call you back in 5 minutes. I said, okay. Yeah. I'll call you back in 20 minutes. And this went on and on, so finally he called me like 5:30 in the morning, and talked for almost 2 hours. You know, he said, look, he goes, I'd love to have you back. He goes, but, you know, I have to bury you. I said, Paul, I don't care, man. I said, I just want to work. I go, you know, I thought I'd enjoy working there and, you know, working, you know, twice a week, 3 times a week, maybe, and making some decent money. But I was doing nothing. And it's like, almost like the only time I went somewhere, not me, but the only time I heard anybody going somewhere, and their stock dropping. You know. So I came back and said, Paul, I said, I don't mind. I said, I'll put over anybody. I just want to work and have good matches. And I started working.
So there you have it, everyone. Mikey Whipwreck chatting to Review Away, and what a great story there, Way, that apparently Vincent complained backstage afterwards about Whipwreck and Kidman and how they couldn't follow that match. Awesome. Vincent, the politician. Unbelievable. So there, thanks very much to Mikey Whipwreck for chatting with us, and I think he, more than anyone, understood the politics in WCW almost right away, and those were his comments on Uncensored. But right now we want to hear your comments, so we're going to go to some feedback. Of course, you can always leave your messages on our Facebook group. Just go to reviewaway.com or just search for it on Facebook, the official Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away, R-E-V-I-E-W-A-W-A-I. So let's go to some feedback, Way.
We got Richard Lee saying, hey guys, the review of SummerSlam 05 was one of your best. After the hardships of trying to review the ECW show, in particular the part where the custody ladder match and you guys tried to explain the logic behind the whole angle, made me laugh harder than I have in a long time, and that's after watching Impact. Anyway, love the interviews, and if possible, may I make a suggestion? Is it possible to do downloadable commentaries for some of these shows a la Riff Tracks? Just a thought. Richard Lee, East Selkirk, Manitoba. What does that? What does he mean? He just means like running commentary as we're watching the show.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with Riff Tracks. I imagine it's something where you can get the video of something and do your own commentary over it, which sounds like a lot of work and also somewhat on the gray area of legalities, being that we don't own the footage.
Yeah, and the way I've had to watch these shows a lot of times, I have to like split them up into, you know, sometimes two or at least two, but like even 3 or 4 sittings, I just can't get through one whole thing.
Fair enough. It would suck if you were a commentator.
I got to take a break, guys. We're going to have an intermission, an impromptu one.
I'm falling asleep, guys. I can't take this awful writing. I got
to... Before I get to this next feedback, I want to definitely say a thank you out there to one of our fans who went to one of the recent WWE Raw house show events. They're currently on their European tour and went out and made a review away sign. So I did post this up. The pictures are up on our Facebook group. And to anyone out there that goes to any wrestling events, if you make a review away sign and take a picture of it at the event, post it on our wall, we will send you a prize. So
that was really cool.
Yeah, so the bar has been set, okay? If you go with this sign, too. Yeah, any signs for live audio wrestling or review away, be sure to make and take your picture and post it on the Facebook group. So we'll now go to Artis Ozolins from Latvia, who says, "Hey, yo, the last edition of Review Away is one of the best ones recently. I want to point out one thing. You should add a warning sign before someone downloads your podcast, as it may be dangerous to your health. It has the potential to end a human life. You ask why? You think I'm crazy? Well, yes. But when I was listening to your podcast on my iPod and riding with my bicycle, and Tony Chimmel announced the following match is a ladder match for the custody of Dominic, I started laughing out loud and I was nearly run over by a car, which suddenly turned into the street I was crossing. That was scary for a moment there, but after that, Wei Ting carried on questioning the social institutions who had allowed this match to happen, and all was good again. Keep turning shit into gold." From Artis. So thank you very much, Artis. I thought that was a great email.
Yeah, I'm glad you're alive.
Please be careful when you're listening to our show and you are operating a vehicle of any sort, whether it be gas-powered or not.
Warning, this podcast
can kill you.
Endanger your life, yes.
Uncensored should have had the same warning.
We just have one more piece from... Jeff Johnson, about Kamala being unhappy and sad to be at the show, he probably got there in street clothes and the place told him to dress up so people recognize him. I've been to an RF video stand at my local mall 10 years ago when they still had carts and they had Christopher Daniels there, along with two indie workers. Originally, Chris was Chris. Then the RF video workers told him to put on his Curry Man mask, and he did. He looked extremely embarrassed. He was turning red under the mask.
How does he know that?
I have no idea. Especially when a mom with a big chest and a stripper body wanted an autograph for her son. Okay. Thank you, guys, for your feedback. Please email us, John, at thefightnetwork.com or way at thefightnetwork.com, but always join the Facebook group, and that's the best way to
do it. Just note the spelling. Way is spelled W-A-I, so go to reviewaway.com to join the Facebook group. Leave your comments, leave your suggestions of events that maybe we're not thinking of that you'd like to hear reviews for. We do try and make a point to get to the reviews that you guys post. And coming up next week, Wei, it is your pick. So what would you like to review?
Well, going back to the Facebook group, a good friend of ours, a loyal listener, Patrick McHugh, has uploaded a show that I'm very interested to watch, the very first TNA weekly pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
I guess this would be the very first TNA broadcast.
Yeah, this would have been June 2002, which actually I've never seen. So that should be an interesting show. And see where NWA TNA has evolved from.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, we saw what they evolved into. They evolved into WCW 1999.
Well, they've made a great stretch. And in 8 years, they've gone back three.
Yeah.
So that's going to be coming up next week, the review of the very first NWA TNA broadcast. And going out, I want to go with a mashup I found online this morning. It's Lady Gaga and Metallica, and the song is called Enter Telephone.
Hello, hello, baby, you called, I can't hear a thing. I have got no service in the club, you say. What did you say? Oh, you're breaking up on me. Sorry, I cannot hear you. I'm kind of busy.
I'm kind of busy.